In the First Circle by Alexander I. Solzhenitsyn. 1. Torpedo. The filigreed hands pointed to 4:05. The bronze of the clock was lustreless in the dying light of a December day. A high window, beginning at floor level, looked down on bustling Kuznetsky Most. Yardmen trudged doggedly to and fro, scraping up fresh snow that was already caking and turning brown under the feet of pedestrians. State Councillor Grade 2 Innocenti Volodin surveyed all this unseeingly, lolling against the edge of the embrasure and whistling something long drawn out and elusive. His fingertips flipped through the pages of a glossy foreign magazine, but he had no eyes for them. Volodin, State Councillor Grade 2, the diplomatic service equivalent of Lieutenant Colonel, was tall and narrow-shouldered, and wore a suit of some silky material instead of his uniform, looking more like a well-off young drone than an official of some importance in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It was time to switch the lights on or go home, but he stayed where he was. 4 o'clock was not the end of the working day, but only of its daytime part. Everyone would now go home, have something to eat, and take a nap. Then, at 10 p.m., the thousands and thousands of windows in 45 all-Union and 20 Union-Republican ministries would light up again. A single individual, ringed by a dozen fortress walls, could not sleep at night, and he had trained the whole of official Moscow to stay awake with him until 3 or 4 in the morning. Knowing the peculiar nocturnal habits of their lord and master, all 60-odd ministers kept vigil, like schoolboys awaiting a summons from the headmaster. To fight off sleep, they would summon their deputies. Then deputy ministers would rouse department heads, research officers would erect ladders and swarm over card indexes, clerks would charge along hallways, and stenographers would break their pencil points. Today was no exception. It was Christmas Eve on Western calendars. All the embassies had fallen silent and given up calling 2 days ago, but the ministry would be staying up through the night just the same. They, the Western diplomats, had 2 weeks of vacation ahead of them. Trusting babes. Stupid donkeys. The young man's nervous fingers paged through the magazine hastily, mechanically, while hot waves of terror welled up inside him, then subsided, leaving him cold. Innocenti flung the magazine away and began pacing the room, shuddering. Should he call, or shouldn't he? Did it have to be now? Would Thursday or Friday be too late over there? Too late. There was so little time to think about it, and absolutely nobody to ask for advice. Surely there was no way of finding out who had made a call from a phone booth. If he spoke only in Russian? If he didn't hang around but walked away quickly? Surely they couldn't identify a muffled voice over the telephone. It must be a technical impossibility. In 3 or 4 days' time, he would be flying there himself. It would be more logical to wait, more sensible. But it would be too late. Oh, hell. His shoulders, unused to such burdens, hunched in a shiver. It would have been better if he had never found out. Better not to know. He scooped up all the papers on his desk and carried them to the safe. His agitation grew. Innocenti lowered his brow onto the dull-painted iron of the safe and rested there with closed eyes. Then, suddenly, as though he felt his last chance slipping away from him, without calling for a car, without so much as closing his inkwell, Innocenti rushed for the door, locked it, handed his key to the guard at the end of the hallway, almost ran down the stairs, overtaking the usual gold-braided personages, dived into his overcoat, planted his hat on his head, and ran out into the damp twilight. Rapid motion brought him some relief. His low French shoes, worn fashionably without galoshes, sank into the slush. As he passed the Vorovsky monument in the ministry courtyard, Innocenti looked up and shuddered. The building of the great Lyubyanka, which looked out on Furkasov Passage, suddenly took on a new significance for him. This grey-black, 9-storied hulk was a battleship, and the 18 pilasters loomed like 18 gun turrets on its starboard side. And Innocenti's tiny craft was being helplessly sucked into its path, under the bows of the swift, heavy vessel. Or no, he wasn't a helpless, captive canoe. He was deliberately heading toward the battleship like a torpedo. He could hold out no longer. He turned right onto Kuznetsky Most. A taxi was about to pull away from the curb. Innocenti grabbed it, hurried the driver downhill, then told him to turn left under the newly lit streetlights of the Petrovka. He still couldn't decide where to make his call, where he could be sure that no one would be hovering impatiently, distracting him, peering through the door. But if he looked for a single phone booth in some quiet spot, he would make himself more conspicuous. Wouldn't it be better to pick one in the thick of it all, as long as it had soundproof brick or stone walls? And how stupid he had been to chase around in a taxi and make the driver a witness. He dug into his pocket, hoping not to find the 15 kopecks for the call. If he didn't, he could obviously put it off. At the traffic light on Ochotny Road, his fingers felt and drew out 2 15-kopeck pieces simultaneously. So that was that. It seemed to calm him down. Dangerous or not, he had no alternative. If we live in a state of constant fear, can we remain human? Without intending it, Innocenti now found himself riding along the Makhovaya past the embassy. Fate was taking a hand. He pressed his face against the window, craning his neck, trying unsuccessfully to make out which windows were lit up. They passed the university, and Innocenti motioned to the right. It was as though he was circling on his torpedo to position it properly. They sped up the Arbat. Innocenti gave the driver 2 bills, stepped out, and crossed the square, trying to moderate his pace. His throat and his mouth were dry with the dryness that no drink can help. By now the Arbat was all lit up. In front of the Hudozhestvenny cinema, there was a long line for the ballerina's romance. A faint bluish mist clouded the red M above the metro station. A woman with a dark southern complexion was selling little yellow flowers. The doomed man could no longer see the battleship, but his breast was bursting with desperate resolve. Remember, though, not a word in English, let alone French. Mustn't leave the smallest clue for the tracker dogs. Innocenti walked on, erect and no longer hurrying. A girl eyed him as he passed. And another one. Very pretty, too. Wish me well out of it. How big the world is, and how full of opportunities. But all that's left for you is this narrow passage. One of the wooden booths outside the station was empty, but seemed to have a broken window. Innocenti walked on, into the station. Here the 4 booths set into the wall were all occupied, but in the one to the left a rough-looking character, not quite sober, was finishing his call and hanging up the receiver. He smiled at Innocenti and started to say something. Innocenti took his place in the booth, carefully pulled the thick paned door closed, and held it shut with one hand. The other, still gloved, trembled as it dropped a coin into the slot and dialed a number. After several prolonged buzzes, the receiver was lifted at the other end.
"Is this the secretariat?"
Innocenti asked, trying to disguise his voice.
"Yes?" "Please put me through to the ambassador immediately."
The answer came in very good Russian.
"I can't call the ambassador. What is your business?" "Give me the charge, then, or the military attaché. Please be quick!"
There was a pause for thought at the other end. Innocenti put himself in fate's hands. If they refused, let it go at that. Don't try a second time. "Very well. I'm connecting you with the attaché." He heard them making the connection. Through the thick glass he saw people passing, within inches of the row of phone booths, hurrying, overtaking one another. One person peeled off and stood impatiently waiting his turn outside Innocenti's booth. Somebody with a thick accent and a well-fed, indolent voice spoke into the telephone.
"Hello? What did you want?"
"Is this the military attaché?"
Innocenti asked brusquely.
"Yes, air attaché," drawled a voice at the other end.
"What next?"
Shielding the receiver with his hand, Innocenti spoke in a low but urgent voice.
"Mr. Air attaché, please write this down and pass it to the ambassador immediately."
"Just a moment," the leisurely voice answered. "I'll call an interpreter."
"I can't wait!"
Innocenti was seething, and he had dropped his attempt to disguise his voice.
"And I will not talk to any Soviet person. Do not put the receiver down. This is a life and death matter for your country, and not only your country. Listen. Within the next few days, a Soviet agent called Georgi Koval will pick something up at a shop selling radio parts. The addresses I don't quite understand, the attaché calmly replied in halting Russian. He, of course, was sitting on a comfortable sofa, and no one was on his trail. Animated female voices could be heard in the background. Call the Canadian embassy. They have good Russian speakers there. The phone booth floor was burning under Innocenti's feet, and the black receiver with its heavy steel chain melting in his hand. But a single foreign word could destroy him.
Listen, listen, he cried in despair.
In a few days' time, the Soviet agent, Koval, will be given important technological information about the production of the atomic bomb at a radio shop.
What? Which avenue?
The attaché sounded surprised. He thought a moment.
Who are you, anyway? How do I know you're speaking the truth?
Do you know what a risk I'm taking?
Innocenti shot back. Somebody seemed to be knocking on the glass behind him. The attaché was silent, perhaps taking a long puff at his cigarette.
The atomic bomb, he repeated dubiously. But who are you? Tell me your name.
There was a muffled click, and dead silence followed, unbroken by crackling or buzzing. They had been cut off.